The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
So the topic that I thought of to talk about today is calming the mind. I think so often in our daily lives, we have a lot of things going on, a lot of busyness, so much in our culture, the busyness and agitation of our lives kind of just enters into our minds, and we end up with this mind that feels like it's multitasking all the time and just not settled, basically not settled. And so this is something that we can work with, and actually there's some tools that are really helpful for supporting this mind to settle down and to become more peaceful, more tranquil, more calm. And so I'd like to explore that a little bit today. There's three factors of mind that the Buddha talked about as being calming factors of mind, and these include tranquility, concentration, and equanimity. So I thought I'd explore each of those a little bit in terms of how that they can support us in our sitting practice and in our daily lives for helping to settle our minds down. One thing I want to say, I'll just describe each of them first. So tranquility is basically calmness of mind. It's a state where there's non-agitation. One teacher described tranquility. It's almost like sometimes there's an agitation in the mind that is so pervasive that we don't recognize it. And yet when it goes away, it's kind of amazing or obvious to us, wow, that agitation has been there. And then we sense a deeper level of tranquility in our experience. This teacher described this experience as being kind of like if you've been sitting in a room where there's been a fan or a refrigerator going, and then suddenly that goes off, how you might not have been noticing that kind of little bit of agitation until it disappears. And so this is kind of the feeling of tranquility. It's like we drop a level into a state of more calm or more non-agitation. So that's tranquility, a state of non-agitation. Then concentration is a settledness of mind, a collectedness of mind, the ability to stay in the present moment, just be in the present moment with a composure, a collectedness. Sometimes the word concentration implies focus for us, but concentration itself doesn't have to have a narrowing of focus. It's more just, is the mind collected? Is it composed? Just basically able to stay here in the present moment. These three begin to shade into each other. You know, the concentrated mind has calmness sometimes. There's this stability of mind that is not agitated about what else is going on, and there's some concentration in that. And then equanimity is a mind that is basically non-reactive. Whatever comes up, the mind can stay stable. That it's not blown around, it's not brushed off, pushed off balance by what's happening in the present moment. Stable, non-reactive. There's another word that I'm trying to remember. Can't think of it. So that's the state of equanimity. So they're very similar, you know, they have some similar qualities, but they're like three different facets of the mind that is settled down. They've got slightly different qualities to them. And one thing I want to say here about settling the mind down, calming the mind down, is that it's not about becoming inert. I think when we think about calming down, or if we like have a 2-year-old that's jumping all over the place and we want them to calm down, we do want them to sit down, we want them to be still, right? We think this, you know, that we have this idea of that's what it means to calm down, to be kind of more still. And there's a piece of that with this settledness of mind. But a calm mind is not necessarily a non-responsive mind. And this is very important. Sometimes we might think that if we calm down our minds, that we would just kind of sit and not do anything. But actually what this calming of the mind does is allows us to enter into a place where we can be more connected with what's true for us and what's wise for us and what's skillful. What's ethical, what's skillful, what's wise. The mind that's calmed down can respond rather than reacting. The mind that's agitated is kind of in a place where it just something comes in and it's like it wants to react immediately. Get rid of that thing or fix that thing or change that thing. So when the mind is not settled down, we tend to be more reactive. And as the mind settles down, it doesn't mean that we don't act. But it actually means that the response can come from a deeper place, a more collected place, a wiser place, a place that's motivated more by compassion or generosity or kindness or wisdom than it is by reactivity of aversion and wanting. So this settled mind, I just want to say that because our point here, the point of practice is not just to become still beings. I really feel that the point of practice is to open and really connect with a wise activity. And the calming and settling of the mind will support that. And so sometimes we have to set aside our reactivity at times to allow ourselves to settle and then learn how to respond from there. So tranquility itself, actually this beginning, this first one, the tranquility, all three of them are supported with mindfulness. We can't really talk about cultivating these three qualities without bringing mindfulness in. And so mindfulness is the fourth quality of mind that supports our settling the mind down. So the tranquility, tranquilizing the mind, this is kind of the basic tool that we can work with to start. First of all, we can begin by recognizing at times that the mind is more settled and more tranquil. So basically recognizing when we are more calm, noticing when that happens, getting familiar with that state. It's helpful to get familiar with that when it happens and know the conditions that support it. And so, you know, you might recognize conditions that support a settledness of mind, like, leaving enough time to get to an appointment, or getting enough sleep at night. You know, it's just some very simple conditions that can really help our minds to be more settled. So when we get familiar with both the conditions that support the mind that's more calm and the calmness itself, that begins to let us kind of like the mind more begins to gravitate and appreciate that tranquility of mind. When we're caught in the reactivity or in the agitated mind, the agitated mind itself has these ideas about what has to be done, when it has to be done, and why it has to be done that kind of obscures the value of the tranquility. And so as we begin to settle and connect with the experience of tranquility itself, that begins to point out its value to us. So it's just helpful to begin to recognize that the tranquility itself has a value. And then we can also begin to incline our minds towards tranquility, towards calm. This is what we started with at the beginning of the meditation, actually, the relaxing. Relaxation is at least for me, it was not what I thought meditation was about originally, and I didn't really see why it would be so important. But relaxation actually, at least what I've found from my own experience, relaxation is the foundation out of which the mindfulness can begin to naturally arise, the meditation can begin to more naturally unfold. When the mind relaxes and the body, when the body relaxes, it supports the mind to relax. And when the mind relaxes, well, when the mind relaxes, there's kind of a natural awareness that can be there. So relaxation is a huge support for cultivating calmness. So beginning our meditation with the conscious relaxing of the body, one thing we can start to see is as we relax the body, there's such a feedback loop between the mind and the body. As we relax the body, we relax the face in particular. I've learned that there are studies done around the face, the expressions on the face, and the states of mind. And when the mind is in a certain state, it's naturally going to express itself through the face. And so if we're agitated, there's going to be some kind of agitated expression on our face. If we're fearful, there's going to be some kind of fearful expression on our face. If we're happy, there's going to be a happy expression on our face. The surprising part of this research that was done around this was that not only does the mind influence the muscles of the face very quickly and very naturally, but if we consciously relax the muscles of the face, it relaxes the mind. Try it right now. You know, just let your face relax. Maybe let the corners of your mouth turn up a little bit in a smile. And does it impact how your mind is? They found when they put people in, I think it was the EEGs, they did EEG recordings, and they had people change their expressions of their face, it changed the state of their mind. And so we can begin with that. We can use this to help our minds start to relax. As we relax the muscles around our eyes, the muscles around our mouth, our jaw, the mind can begin to relax. Also with other muscles of the body, the same thing. You know, that we tend to hold tension that's reflective of our mental tension. And so if we can consciously relax that physical tension, it really supports the mind beginning to let go of some of its habitual mind states, its habitual reactivity, its habitual agitation even. We may be just in a habitual state of agitation and able to just consciously relax our face and feel that habitual agitation shift a little bit. Also, I found, as we explored in the guided meditation, relaxing inside the body. Sometimes people have access to this and sometimes not. But I had enough teachers guide me in this that I began to realize that this was a very powerful way to support a relaxation. Also because I think the organs in the body are very responsive to a state of mind. You know, if there's fear, there's kind of a churning in the stomach, or if there's anger, there's a kind of a pressure and tension in this part of the body. So there can be, it's actually possible to consciously soften the organs. I didn't necessarily believe it at first, but I have found it is possible. And so even if you don't believe it, just, you know, checking in from time to time, you know. The throat is one that we can sometimes touch into, relaxing the throat. A little bit of breath can sometimes open that. Throat can relax. The heart can relax. The stomach, the intestines. And so we can consciously support a relaxation, which allows the beginning of a settling of the mind. This is an excellent place to start our meditation. Just give yourself the gift of settling, relaxing the body. And then once we've relaxed the body, sometimes I found this to be another interesting way in to kind of incline towards relaxation, incline towards a little bit of calmness, that with whatever subtleness you have from having relaxed the body, you could try dropping in a request, basically using an idea, dropping in an idea or a request. Is it possible for the body to relax a little more? May the body relax? Not to try to do it. This is really, truly just a kind of an inclining or seeing. It's more like, body and mind, are you willing to relax a little bit more? Show me if you are. So it's not a demand. It's more of a request. And sometimes, more often than I would have thought, the body is willing, the mind is willing to release a little bit of tension that I wouldn't have even really known was there. Or I wouldn't have known how to release it if I did know it was there. So sometimes we can make this request. It's just like dropping a question in or dropping this request into our meditation, dropping it into our mind and body. It doesn't even have to be in our meditation. I can do this while I'm driving. I can do it while I did it this afternoon while I was making my meal because I had pinched this nerve in my back and definitely noticed that there was some agitation in the mind. And I was like, oh, okay, I feel this agitation in preparing my meal. Might it be possible to feel this pain and have some relaxation about it? Whew. Just a little bit of releasing. So kind of allowing the wisdom of the mind to offer itself to us if it's willing. It's kind of that willingness. Are you willing to show me? So you can make those requests. May the body relax. Or are you willing to relax some more? May the mind relax. You can even ask the mind, might the mind be able to relax a little bit? May the mind relax. These are ways into supporting a little bit of settling of the mind. And our habits for unsettledness will be strong. You know, the movement towards restlessness being kind of the key agitating mind state that we could say is kind of opposite from tranquility. It's the mind that's scattered, unable to be still, very energetic, sometimes energy in the body associated with that. And so sometimes one way into settling the mind is basically to just accept and allow, yep, this agitation is here. We can sometimes study or incline our minds towards a quality by studying what's in its way. And so that restless mind, the definition almost of non-tranquil mind, get to know the restless mind. Ways into that, this can be challenging too. One of the most helpful tools for me, at least around working with restlessness, is let the experience, you know, just let the experience get big. It's almost like the energy of restlessness wants to be big. And so if you can have the idea or the sense of allowing the restlessness to be as big as the room or as big as the city, just let it be boundless. Let it get big. Surprisingly sometimes, oop, it's doing that thing again. Surprisingly sometimes when we let the restlessness get big, it doesn't actually get stronger, which is what we might think it would do as we let it get big. It gives it more space so that it's not so constricted. It's kind of like you've got some wild horses. And if you put those wild horses in a small, what do they call it? corral. If you put those horses in a small corral, they're going to be like going crazy. But if you put those horses in a big pasture, they can run and like run off that energy. And so it's kind of allowing in our minds, it's almost like a mind shift or like using a perception that you just let the restlessness get big. Don't try to hold it in a container. Just let it get big. That can sometimes allow the mind to be a little more at ease and paradoxically can kind of let that restlessness settle. You know, sometimes there's different ways to approach settling the mind. I mean, one thing we might think about with an agitation is that it's kind of like we've got a jar of muddy water that's really been shaken up or stirred up. We've got this jar and we've been stirring it up. Our agitated mind has been, the thoughts that agitate the mind are like stirring up the mud in that water, just continuously stirring up the mud. And one way to try to settle that down, first thing that's important is to take the spoon out. I'm going to switch to the other mic. Okay. I lost my thought. I know I was talking about restlessness and letting it big. The spoon, thank you. So the first thing to do is to take the spoon out of that jar of muddy water. And with that, if you just set the jar down and don't keep picking it up and shaking it, if you just set the jar down, it will settle. And so part of the way we can deal with the restlessness is give it a big enough container that we don't keep stirring it. And so we can sit with it. We can sit with it with some sense of stillness. And it will settle down. Sometimes I actually enjoy this process. It's like when the reactivity around the restlessness, that swirling mind or that swirling energy, when that reactivity to that swirling energy goes away and it's got enough space, it can sometimes just feel like life or vibration. And you can just sit there with it and it's almost like feeling that muddy water settling. It's just like slowly that energy just, you can perceptively feel over the course of like 10 minutes, it just kind of settles down. So that's one way to work with the restlessness. Not trying to stop it, not trying to fix it, but just simply allowing it and watching it kind of run its course. If you put all those horses in that big corral, they'll run for a while, but they won't run forever. So it's kind of like that. If we can give it space and not be reactive, not keep stirring it up with our thoughts, it'll begin to settle down. We can also play with the kind of a blend of inclining the mind towards settling, requesting, kind of like I was doing this afternoon when I said I was making my meal and requesting the relaxation. It's kind of like that requesting the relaxation of mind. May the mind relax. It can't be a repression of the agitation that's already there. We really have to allow that agitation and see, might the mind be willing to relax in the midst of this agitation? And that's what I was exploring this afternoon. It's like, okay, yep, that agitation is there. And feeling it, knowing it, and inclining the mind towards as much rest as it could find in that moment. And so there's kind of this blend sometimes of allowing the agitation and continuing to just keep checking in. Yep, there's that agitation, and are you willing to relax a little bit more? Oh, yep, there's that agitation, and are you willing to relax a little more? There's just this very gentle, friendly, very friendly, allowing approach to this settling down of the mind. The next piece, or the next factor that supports the settling of the mind, is concentration. And concentration is actually not something we can just say, oh, let me be concentrated. I mean, you can try that. May the mind be concentrated. See what happens. But most of the time, what it does take is a little bit of energy and mindfulness together. We cultivate a steadiness of mindfulness over time. We may choose to pick a particular object, like the breath. Stay with the breath. Stay with the breath. Moment after moment. Or we might simply allow our minds to enter into that stream of sound and body sensation and thought and emotion and body sensation and sound and body sensation and breath and sound, just this flow of experience. Concentration is not about focusing. The factor of concentration in the mind is not about focusing the mind. It's not even necessarily about landing on one experience. It is about a continuity of mindfulness over time. And that can happen by picking one experience like the breath and trying to stay with it, or it can happen by just simply staying connected with a flow of experience. Either way, the mind is not pulled out into thought. It's present. It's present in the present. It's not pulled away from the present moment in thought. Thought may arise in concentration. This is something that's sometimes unfamiliar to some people, but we can be concentrated, have a thought arise, know that thought is arising. We're aware. We're present for it. A thought arising doesn't necessarily mean concentration is ended. So this stability of mindfulness over time is the concentration. And in terms of cultivating that, it's really, really helpful to use the foundation of tranquility, relaxation, in order to do this practice of steadying the mind, of calming the mind through concentration. So we can have the idea, okay, the mind's really agitated. Let me just stay with the breath. Oh, agitation, stay with the breath. Stay with the breath. Kind of this almost jerking the mind back to the breath to try to calm the mind down. Well, that very pulling has a kind of an agitation to it. And so that might not be the most settling way to let the mind calm down. To let the mind settle. What I found in the practice of concentration is that a really gentle approach, a light touch, a relaxed attention, a relaxed mindfulness, a kind attention, all of these approaches to staying in the present moment. Just enough attention to be with an in-breath. Just try this right now while I'm talking. Just enough attention to be with an in-breath. Just enough attention to be with an out-breath. That's all you have to do. Half a breath. Can you stay with half a breath? How about the next half a breath? Relaxing the mind. Actually, I found keeping relaxation a priority as opposed to the idea of staying with the object. If relaxation is the priority, there will be a much more natural, easeful settling into concentration. Just enough just enough effort to be with a breath, half a breath, half a breath, half a breath. Right now, I'm going to ask you to pay attention to some other experiences. How much effort does it take to pay attention to your hands? How about your feet? How about an in-breath? How about the sensations of your lips? How about the sound outside? In a moment, it's not very hard. Is it? Is that hard? Just, all you have to do really is relax. And hearing is there. And sensation is there. And so this relaxation is what supports our ability to know experience. And so keeping relaxation as a priority, and not as a like a tightly held priority, but just this is a ground. The relaxed attention is the ground from which the concentration will much more naturally build. And the mind goes off into thought. We wake up. If we're tight in that moment, we're agitating the mind. If we wake up and recognize, oh, back, awareness, mindfulness is back. Relax in that moment. Reconnect. Oh, there's sound. Oh, there's body sensation. And so this relaxation, that first exploration of tranquility and relaxation, is what will support the exploration of concentration. And as the mind becomes more concentrated, as it becomes more stable, it becomes less reactive, actually, because it's just meeting experience. It hears the sound outside, and then there's the next experience. There's a sound outside, and then there's a body sensation, and then there's the sound of the chirp, and then there's another body sensation, and then there's an emotion, and then there's another sound. With the attention steadily meeting a new experience each moment, and that might be the breath. You might be connecting with the breath steadily. Light touch, in-breath, light touch, out-breath, light breath, in-breath, light touch, out-breath. Just the steady connection moment to moment. As you do that, there's not much room for reactivity to arise. The sound happens, and the mind is picking up on the next thing rather than thinking about motorcycles, and why do they allow motorcycles on this road during the meditation anyway? I mean, don't they know we're meditating here? So the mind isn't doing that. So it's not stirring itself up. And so the concentration, this steady connection to the present moment, helps to eliminate some of the spoon. It helps to keep the mind from stirring itself up. So this is the way that the concentration supports this settling of mind. And this one now feeds into the third quality, the equanimity. Because the equanimity, the definition of the equanimity is the non-reactivity of mind. And so the concentration begins to get us a taste or a flavor of what that means for the mind to be able to just meet the next experience, without having a reaction of dislike or wanting. Experience arises, and so often, if it's pleasant, we like it, we want more of it, we go off into a story about that. Oh, more of that, how can I get more of that? If it's unpleasant, we don't like it, we don't want it, we figure out how to get rid of it. Less of that, how do I get rid of this from my life? And so that's the mind being in reactive mode. And equanimity is the mind that can just meet whatever's happening, just whatever's happening, and not be pulled into reactivity. And so concentration supports our familiarity with non-reactivity. And yet we don't need to be concentrated We don't need to be fully concentrated to have access to non-reactivity. The equanimity is mostly strengthened, not simply by the mind that's steady in the present moment, not simply by the mind that is just moment-to-moment present, but much more by the presence of wisdom in the mind, the presence of understanding that so much of the way that we react, the ways that we react, you know, something's pleasant, we like it, we want to get more of it, we're pulled out into that idea of wanting, and we actually, in that being pulled out in that idea of wanting, we're not seeing the instability of that. We're not seeing the off feeling, the dukkha, the suffering of that. Likewise with the reaction of aversion. When we're pulled into the story of the aversion, we're not noticing how much we are inherently out of balance. And so the wisdom that supports equanimity begins to understand that these qualities of the aversion and the greed are not really that helpful in terms of living a peaceful life. That it's it's back to that place, what I was talking about at the beginning, that so much in our ordinary lives we are reacting out of greed, out of aversion, out of confusion. We're in reactive mode. But as the mind gets more settled and more calm, more tranquil, it gets more out of that reactive mode and into responsive mode. So the responsiveness that's available when we're not in this push-pull, when we're not in the gotta get that, gotta get rid of that, is the responsiveness that can come when the mind is balanced, when the mind has equanimity, when the mind is less reactive. And so equanimity also, I think, we may have the idea, oh, if we're equanimous, there's the idea that, oh, things as they are, things are okay as they are. That's sometimes the way equanimity is described, that no problem. And it definitely feels like there's no problem. Like it has the inner sense that the mind is not well, not reactive. And yet that non-reactivity doesn't mean that we don't respond when there is something that needs responding to. But equanimity has the balance of mind to recognize that those actions may have some results and may not have some results. Our peace of mind is not impacted by the results of the actions. And so we can act trying to be a force for good in the world, of compassion in the world, of change in the world, and yet not have our own inner sense of well-being shaken by the conditions of the world. So this is equanimity. It is responsive. It responds with compassion. It responds with love. It responds with generosity. It responds with wisdom. So the cultivation of equanimity, because it's related to wisdom, sometimes we can incline our minds towards reflections of wisdom. Equanimity, I think, is the It's the hardest of the three to really land in, because it takes so much willingness to let go of our habitual patterns, our habitual push-pull. And yet we can begin to practice with that. We can practice with it by, as I suggested around the restlessness, we can cultivate equanimity by noticing what gets in its way, by noticing the reactions of aversion and greed that are in the way of equanimity, not in the way of responsiveness. We're not trying to get rid of all action, but the reaction, noticing the reactivity, noticing those push-pull around greed and aversion, we can begin to study them and begin to recognize how the experience of those states is not one of well-being. When there's aversion in the mind already feels like it's not in a place of well-being. When there's greed in the mind does not feel like it's in a place of well-being. And this body-mind system actually naturally wants to gravitate to well-being, but it doesn't often get all the information it needs to find its way to well-being, because there's so much confusion in the mind. And so much, as I said, when we're caught in the story of aversion, for example, when we're caught in that story of aversion, the mind is not aware of the absence of well-being in the present moment, because it's so focused on the idea that if I can get rid of that thing, then I'll have well-being in the future. And so essentially we are willing to give up well-being here and now for some idea of well-being in the future. And so what we can begin to do is begin to recognize the inherent off feeling that happens when we are in an aversive state, the inherent off feeling that's happening when we're in a greedy state. And that begins to give our organism some more clear information about where well-being actually lies. Well-being actually lies in the present moment. It's available. It's actually available in the present moment, this well-being. It's available in the present moment. And it doesn't mean that we give up a connection with other people. It doesn't mean that we give up a connection to our sense of engaging in the world for wholesome change. It doesn't mean that we give those up. But we do it from a place of well-being. We act from a place of well-being. And so we can begin to explore the non-well-being of greed and aversion and begin to recognize as it begins to release. And get the feeling, get the sense. It's a leap of faith initially, I think, because our whole way of being motivated in our lives has so often come from greed and aversion in the past. You know, we think, if I didn't have anger, why would I do anything? If I didn't have the energy of anger or greed, I can't imagine that I would do anything. And so we believe that story. And yet as we actually begin to play with this in our direct experience and we see the aversion and the anger fall away, we're still in contact with what's happening in the world with an open heart. And this open heart doesn't have reactivity at its base. It has equanimity and love at its base. And that open heart then, we find, actually is motivated to act in the world from a completely different perspective. So it takes a leap of faith at first to begin to trust that, okay, if I actually pay attention to this aversion, it's going to be supportive for changing, transforming the mind, if I actually turn my attention to this greed, it's going to be supportive for the transformation of the mind. And as we start to feel a shift around those, we may get the sense of the possibility of equanimity. We may get a taste of it from time to time and see that it's not simply an indifferent, non-active place, but it's very alive. And so equanimity supports a settledness of mind because we are available to meet and walk through the world from a place of balance and skillfulness. We're able to respond to suffering. We're able to be joyful when there's joy. We're able to act or not act from this place of balance. And this contributes to our settledness of mind, partly because so much, at least I've seen in my own mind, so much of my agitation, at least going into the future, the agitation about the future is, am I going to be able to deal with this? Am I going to be able to deal with that? I better prepare. I better think through these things that are going to happen. This was a major kind of suffering in my mind before I started practicing, and even a good ways through the practice, that my mind would have the capacity to think through many different scenarios. And it would try to figure out all the different responses. If that's going to happen, that's what I'll do. If that's going to happen, that's what I'll do. If that's going to happen, that's what I'll do. The mind got so agitated thinking about the possible futures, trying to figure out how it would respond to imagined futures, that it was not in the present moment, and it was agitated in the process of imagining those imagined futures. And what I began to see as I started practicing and noticing this pattern in spades is that the vast majority of the time, none of those scenarios even happened. And even if one of them did happen, the thing that I planned to do, if that scenario happened, wasn't necessarily available for me to do because my mind was in some other state than it was when I was in the imagination. And so I began to recognize the futility of that pattern. So that was how, you know, watching the pattern began to educate me. But what really the trust is that if I'm present now, if I'm here now with the as best as I can be in this moment with non-reactivity, if I'm available for what's happening, and that being available for what's happening might be being available for some kind of reactivity. We can actually practice equanimity about reactivity. We can practice steadiness of mind around reactivity. Oh, there's anger arising. I can watch that. If we can practice this stability of mind, this equanimity of mind in the present moment, that is what prepares us best for meeting whatever will happen in the future. And again, this is a kind of a trust that develops over time, that we recognize that the best way to meet any moment is to be fully present and available, responsive, not reactive. And the trust that develops there is a trust of wisdom. It's a trust that is supported by equanimity. And our minds don't feel like they have to plan everything out, because there's the trust that I can be available to be there for whatever happens. So, comments, questions, thoughts, ideas this sparked? Yeah.
On the way here tonight, we were discussing Donald Trump. And I've been listening to you and wondering how to apply response rather than reaction to Donald Trump. What he wants is for us to react. And obviously, I don't want to do what he wants me to do.
That's actually one reflection that's helpful. You know, sometimes, just in general, the Buddha points out that when we let ourselves get angry, we are doing what our enemies would want us to do. We're putting ourselves in a place that our that the people that don't wish us well would want us to be in, because it does not feel good to be angry. And so this is, you're right, I mean, this reactivity, it seems very much that he's got a very reactive mode. How to deal with this with responsiveness rather than reactivity? I would say to start with, it might be helpful to take it in small doses. I wouldn't necessarily look up all of the references to what he's saying. If you find yourself reactive to something, really reactive to something, it can be helpful recognizing that the conditions for the arising of the reactivity is sometimes the direct contact. And so sometimes helpful to give yourself some space around that. So that's one piece. And then find some ways to settle your mind. So I think starting with the relaxation. So you notice your mind goes into reactive mode. We have to start where we are. We can't necessarily go right to the responsive rather than reactive. So there we are, we're reactive. And so noticing that, as soon as you notice that, starting to, can I relax? Can I relax the body? Relax the face, actually. Try relaxing the face. Because there's going to be probably a lot of responding in the face. So relax the face. See if that supports a relaxation, a settling in the body. So the first thing, I think, will be to find your way to settling the reactivity. And once the reactivity is settled, the responsiveness will be more natural. It's not so much that we can pick up the responsiveness, but we work with the reactivity, and as the reactivity settles, there's a natural responsiveness. We might use some reflections, when somebody is saying things that we feel are very hurtful or painful, recognizing that, just as a reflection, recognizing that that kind of thing arises out of their own suffering. So it sometimes can help to have that kind of a recognition that, right, that person is actually not happy. Person does not seem to be a happy person. So, but I mostly would encourage the working with the reactivity to begin with, and finding ways to not be in the field of that all the time. Yeah. So, time to stop. Thank you all.